My mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. In the verses just before what I read just now, Jesus had just said, when they bring you before the synagogues and the rulers and the authorities, do not worry about how you are to defend yourselves or what you are to say. And then suddenly, out of the blue, someone in the crowd shouted to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." Someone had not been paying attention. Someone's mind had been somewhere else. Someone in the crowd was very, very worried. Worried about money. Jesus' story of the rich and the foolish farmer is framed by the commandment, do not worry. Just before the story of the farmer, Jesus told his listeners to not worry about what they would say when they were brought to trial for his sake. And just after the story, he said, do not worry about your life. Do not worry about what you will eat or about your body, what you will wear. And in between, he told a story about one of the things we worry about the most, money. Well, we can empathize with Jesus' anonymous listener. We live in a prosperous country, and the economy is fairly robust. But we probably worry about money some of the time. Some time ago, there was a public television broadcast. They broadcast a program entitled Affluenza. The point of the program was simple. The more money we make, the more we want, and the more we spend. It seems like our wants always outpace our income. So when Jesus' listener asked him to command his brother to divide the inheritance, Jesus responded, take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Well, sadly, human beings are greedy, and older translations use the word covetous instead of greedy. But the two things are very different. Greed is wanting more than we need. Covetousness is looking at what someone else has and wishing that we had what they have. And there's nothing wrong with wanting a nice house, a nice car, a nice clothes, but there is something very wrong if we feel incomplete if we don't have all of those things that we would like to have. Yet, our economy is largely based on creating in us a desire for the things we don't really want or certainly don't need. Advertisers base their appeals on our insecurities. Drink this kind of soft drink. Use this deodorant. Buy this car. It will make you feel happy. It'll make you attractive and smell good. It'll make you fulfilled. A former Episcopal bishop of Alabama, William George McDowell, said that the cause of the Great Depression was the general extravagance in the recent era of so-called prosperity. This is an economic term for presuming on God's providence. The vicious cycle is something like this. Our desires are inflamed by clever advertising till we feel we must indulge them for the things we want. We delude ourselves into thinking we must have the things we crave and that we can afford them. He said this in 1931, 79 years ago. And they were prophetic words, as applicable now as then. Many years ago, there was this renegade Baptist minister and kind of an all-around troublemaker. His name was Clarence Jordan. And he rendered the Gospels in the idiom of the modern South. And here's his translation of today's Gospel from his book, The Cotton Patch Version of Luke and Acts. A certain rich fellow's farm produced well. And he held a meeting with himself and he said, "What shall I do? I don't have room to store my crops." And then he said to himself, "Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my old barns and build some bigger ones in which to store all of my wheat and produce. And I will say to myself, 'Self, you have enough stuff stashed away to do you a long time. Recline, dine, wine, and shine.'" But God said to him, "You nitwit, at this very moment, your goods are putting the screws on your soul. All these things you've grubbed for, to whom shall they really belong?" That's the way it is with a man who piles up stuff for himself without giving God a thought. The reason I like Clarence Jordan's translation of the story of the rich but foolish farmer is that among all the translations of the New Testament in my library, Jordan translates the story correctly. The New Revised Standard Version, which we read from every Sunday, said, "This very night your life is being demanded of you." Well, that's not what the Greek text says. Rather, it says, "They have demanded your life." And so the question is, well, who is the "they" who demanded the life of the farmer? The "they" are his things. He no longer owned his possessions, they owned him. Or in Jordan's words, "Your goods are putting the screws on your soul." Somewhere deep inside, we all know that Jesus was stating a powerful truth. Everything we own also owns a little bit of us. If we own a house or a car, then we are under an obligation to earn the money to pay for the house or the car. We have to take time to see to it that our house or our car is cared for. We are no longer quite as free as we were before. The rich farmer made the mistake of believing that he really possessed great wealth, although Jesus said that the reality was that it possessed him. Movie magnate Sam Goldwyn, on being told that he couldn't take it with him when he died, replied, "Well then, I just won't go." Well, that's not an option. We can't take it with us, nor can we refuse to go when it's our time. And neither can we really possess anything. All we can do is hold it in trust. And in truth, oftentimes today's possessions become tomorrow's garage sale treasures. So Jesus concluded his parable on the rich farmer by saying, "So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." He had stored wealth in earthly barns, even though he had had the opportunity to store it in heaven. I want to reiterate this. Wealth is not wrong and it's not sinful, but it is problematic. The spiritual problem of wealth is that it anchors our hearts too firmly to this world rather than in God's kingdom. The rich and the foolish farmer tore down his barn and built bigger barns. He opened more bank accounts and invested his money in high-tech startups. Well, there's really nothing wrong with any of that, but God invites us to invest our time, our talent, and our money, ourselves, in the kingdom of heaven. The story is told that at the funeral of the fabulously wealthy Aristotle Onassis, one of the mourners turned to another and said, "How much did he leave?" And his friend replied, "Everything. He left everything." Amen.